Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's just gone 9 minutes past 10. You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and we've got a fantastic show lined up for you today. Firstly, we're going to be chatting with Dr. Patel. Let me read this long list of introduction and achievements, I'm going to say. So, clinical scientist renowned for her work in pediatric HIV treatment, optimization, tuberculosis, and COVID vaccine research and material health. We're going to be talking about the HIV cure. How important are those trials that are currently taking place on a cure for HIV? What does it mean for the 8 million South Africans living with HIV? And then on the second half of the hour, we're going to be chatting with Dr. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization. The topic is the importance and significance of World Health Day. It is World Health Day today, the 7th of April, and we're going to be looking at hospitals in developing countries. What are the state of hospitals in developing countries? Let us have your WhatsApp numbers on 061-895-1019, and we'll get our fantastic guests to answer them.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us on this fantastic Monday morning. We've got one heck of a show lined up for you today, and let's get started with our first guest, Dr. Fahiza Patel, clinical scientist renowned for her work in pediatric HIV treatment, optimization, TB, and COVID vaccine research and maternal health. Doc, thank you for joining us.
Morning. Thank you for having me and all the listeners.
It's absolutely awesome to have you on the show. Thank you. And by the way, please stop doing all of these amazing things. Otherwise, it's going to take me the whole show to read your introduction. So let's chat about the HIV cure. How important are the trials going on? But firstly, what is an HIV cure? And could you break it down for our listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. So HIV is a very fascinating little bug. And it's one of those germs that's been quite challenging over many, many years to control and to keep the replication under control and to cure. There have been many, many trials looking at vaccinations potentially, and none of them have done really well. We have had really good success, especially in the last few years and in our country specifically, at controlling HIV with ART, so antiretroviral therapy, and done really well as in preventing mother-to-child transmission, which is now called vertical transmission, more for stigma reasons. So we've done really well at doing that. What we globally have not done well at is finding a cure, but there are many people who have been trying to do this. Some of the funding challenges that we've had recently have put a large spanner in the works of some of the vaccine trials. But in terms of cure specifically for HIV, in the context of what is currently being spoken of, is a functional cure. And functional cure means essentially that you give therapy to a patient who then is not replicating the virus, firstly, and secondly, minimizes the amount of virus that is kind of gone to sleep within the body. So the challenges with HIV are, firstly, that it's very clever, and secondly, that it hides in spaces like the lymph nodes, in the gut, in neural tissue, so the brain and other neural tissues in the body, and remains stagnant there. And virus replicating can be in other parts of the body. The third thing that makes it a very complicated germ is that it integrates into the DNA of a person, which is why it is very difficult to get rid of. So a functional cure is essentially not getting rid of the virus completely, but ensuring that firstly, it's not replicating in the body, and secondly, you're minimizing the amount of sleeping virus within these, what we call reservoirs, so spaces in which the bug is actually asleep. It's challenging, firstly, because a lot of these sorts of cure studies are very particularly looking at patients who have been identified as having HIV very early in the infection. So the reservoir has not established itself. So this is a niche group of patients. It's not what you would generally find in the population. People tend to be diagnosed quite late. People tend to be diagnosed and then ignore the diagnosis. And by then the reservoir has set in. So these cure studies are great in terms of giving us information in the science realm of HIV. But what it means clinically and practically on the ground is quite different and quite dangerous in terms of potentially giving people the idea that stopping ART is safe. So it's very important to realize that these are studies. They're being done in a very controlled environment, and they're being done on patients who are very specifically chosen to be able to be part of these studies. The other thing that's important to remember is that these studies actually have very small numbers of patients. And because they're very small numbers, 20% of 20 patients isn't a lot of patients. Right. And that is generally not generalizable to the population as a whole.
How well are we moving forward, though, in terms of finding something that people can live safely with the virus? And then also, is it possible to get in the future a person's countdown to a point where they don't transmit to other people?
Yes, we've done very well in that department. We are part of the research that we do looks specifically at optimizing ART regimens. In our case, very specifically for the maternal and child population, and children are very difficult to be able to give meds to. They hate the taste. There's too many medications. The medication is difficult to swallow because the tablets are so big. And so we have to make tablets and suspensions or dispersible drugs, which means it's essentially like a vitamin C that you drop into some water, and that's easier to take. And we've done really well at trying to get more options available. And these options have then been included into the guidelines and have been available in standard of care. The Department of Health has been great in supporting getting those medications out to make it easier for our patients to be able to take medication for ARVs. Motsoaledi has a campaign at the moment to try and get to those patients that haven't been tested and aren't on ARVs. And the 2030 goals for 95% of people being tested, 95% of those people being on ARVs, and 95% of those being virally suppressed is a goal that we can achieve if we just put in that extra bit of effort. So I'm quite proud of what work we've done in general with the studies that we do and with Department of Health and the steps we've taken forward.
I suppose just as an opportunity, and I'd like to ask you to do so, just to brag a little bit about South Africa and the research that's been done here and just how good we actually are. Could you share a little bit about that? We're going to go to a live read, and then I'd like you to just share a little bit about how really good we are in South Africa with regards to the research that's being done. Fantastic. Thank you. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. Thank you for joining us. I'm chatting with Dr. Faiza Patel. We're talking HIV, the cure that's being researched and the work that's being done. And just before we went to break, I asked the doc that when we came back from break, could we get a little bit of bragging, please? So can you share with us how good we really are in South Africa at this work that we've been doing?
Oh, thanks, Nicholas, for that opportunity. South African researchers and scientists and medical doctors who've been in this space for many, many years have been fundamental in moving research forward, and that's in various infectious diseases across the globe, but mostly those that affect the populations in which we work. So HIV, TB, for example, both drug-sensitive TB and multi-drug-resistant TB, which are problems in our country and the sub-Saharan African space, as well as malaria, for example, a little bit more north of us, and some of the STDs, the sexually transmitted diseases. But there are people that work in the research space within South Africa, inside and outside of VITSRHI, where I work, where we generally tend to be quite collaborative with the work that we do, which is very important for us to make sure that our populations are being served more than the individual institutes. And the work that has been done spans COVID-19, TB, HIV, HIV cure, HIV ARVs, PrEP, which is prevention of ARV, prevention of HIV using at least one drug that's part of an ARV regimen. And the idea is always to do what is best for the community. We have many, many scientists at very high levels, senior levels, who are part of the WHO decision-making groups, who form part of Gavi, for example, which are vaccine institutes that are globally important and give guidance on vaccines, when they can be used, when they can't be used. And our researchers have for many years contributed to this kind of work and continue to contribute despite the recent challenges we've had with funding from the US. These sorts of important aspects of healthcare in general, we need to work together and we need to find support from parts outside of the US. And there's many people out there who are willing to help us. So whether it's the EU, whether it's people in the East, whether it's nonprofit organizations or people in the private space, which is very important for that support to come towards doing research, because this is so important. I mean, a lot of our studies have changed guidelines, have resulted in registration of drugs, which are now more easily usable by our patients. And the work that we do is fundamental because our populations are very different to the populations in the global north. Yes. Our immune systems are different, our genetics are different, our social spaces are different, and we need to be able to cater to our specific populations. And in order to do that, we have to do the research in that group of patients so that we can prove that that's where it works, and that we can get the benefit from all of this work.
And also something to be very proud of, Doc, as South Africans. And it's something that we, and I think it's also something that our youth that are coming through high school and coming into university and considering careers should definitely look at, because there's an incredible pool of expertise to join and to upskill and to make a fundamental difference.
Definitely.
If we look at TB and HIV, and I know within your field of expertise, is this a uniquely South African thing? Is it quite prevalent? And what are the challenges in working with TB and with HIV?
So not uniquely a South African thing. TB and HIV co-infection is a known phenomenon globally. We have a particular issue with the co-infection rate because both our rates of TB and our rates of HIV are so high. And that includes drug-sensitive TB. So drug-sensitive TB being TB that would be responsive to the first-line set of drugs versus multi-drug-resistant TB, which requires slightly more complex regimens and has different side effect profiles along with HIV. So it is something that we specifically focus on because if a patient has TB, you have to make sure they don't have HIV. And the other way around, so anyone who gets diagnosed with TB gets an HIV test, and anyone who gets diagnosed with HIV will get a TB test. And TB tests are done quite frequently because TB can be quite a sneaky little germ as well, especially in the pediatric population. Very difficult to diagnose and very difficult to find because the sputum doesn't contain as much of the germ as it would in an adult. So often it is something that's diagnosed based on clinical presentation, possibly augmented by an X-ray, but not necessarily diagnosed on a sputum sample, for example. There are other ways to diagnose TB, specifically when you are severely immunocompromised with HIV, and those include urine samples, for example, to look for TB. But it's definitely something that's always in the top of your mind, especially when you've got a patient that is severely ill.
Okay. One of the things that we touched on briefly was your work with kids and with children. Other than just the research into the disease and the treatment, how advanced has South Africa been, and I suppose how skilled in making sure that people are sticking to their treatment regimens, are taking the medication? Because I think that's more important in certain extents than the actual medication. You can have the best medicine in the world, but if you're not taking it as you should, then it's not going to be effective as it should be.
Yes, that's right. So there are various programs in clinic facilities where there's support groups. There usually is a social worker or a psychologist attached to a treating facility or nearby, where there's support for psychosocial issues that the patient may be having. In our environment, those are usually quite complicated. We've got very mobile populations and high rates of gender-based violence, for example. So in an adult female, especially of a younger age, those are concerns to worry about. In the pediatric population, one of the biggest issues is the disclosure of the HIV status, so letting the patient know that they have HIV, especially if it's an infection they've had since birth or soon after birth. And it's not something that they've picked up as part of sexual activity at a later age. So these are all complicated issues that are often individual treatment plans for these patients based on their support systems and the challenges that they're facing as individuals. But all of these issues are fundamental in maintaining adherence to the medication. Right. Kids can get quite angry when they've been told that they've got HIV and they don't understand, stop taking their meds, for example, and have other normal teenage-related concerns. One never understands fully how a teenager's mind works. But it does add another level of complexity to this entire process. So quite an interesting space.
Absolutely. It's amazing. We've all been teenagers, but we don't seem to remember that when we're trying to relate and understand teenagers. That rather challenging. In terms of the general population, we've got 8 million people living with HIV. For those who are not infected, or even those who are, what can we do in our treatment and dealing with people who have disclosed their status, or perhaps those who haven't? But let's talk about those who have. How can we be kinder? What should we be doing? What should we be focusing on within ourselves to help assist, you know, and avoid embarrassment and extra pain and stress for those living with HIV? Sorry, it's quite a long-winded question.
I think just the kindness and understanding towards a person who has taken quite a big step if they have disclosed their HIV status to you, because that requires quite a high level of trust between two individuals. Those particular sorts of individuals require not a lot of support, because often that's the biggest step that's the most difficult, is actually just saying those words. And once those words have been said, it's always a little bit easier. And being supportive, I think some of us have domestic workers or people that we employ for other reasons who may or may not be on ART, and ensuring that they are having the ability to attend their clinic visits or fetch their medication or have additional visits if they require to for tests, or have a baby and be able to take that baby for regular HIV testing, and just being supportive of those processes. Because if you don't feel like you've got the support to do that, you're very easily going to be able to find a reason to default those visits, and defaulting those right. visits results in lack of testing, lack of treatment, and then it's a bit of a slippery slope.
Thank you so much, Doc. Really appreciate your time and what you've come to share with us. And I think that's a great way just to wrap up. Dr. Faiza Patel, thank you so much for joining us, for your time, and keep doing the amazing work that you're doing so it can take me longer to read your introduction, Doc.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
Have an amazing day. That was Dr. Faiza Patel, clinical scientist, renowned for her work in pediatric HIV treatment optimization, TB, COVID vaccine research, and maternal health.